This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. At the bottom of the hour, I have a really fascinating power couple. Diane Romaine and Sterling Bennett will be talking about their books. They are a fascinating couple, both professors, and they've both written absolutely wonderful books, and I'm so thrilled that I will be talking to them. But I'm going to be starting today with an author whose books I admire so much, and they come just at the right time because October is National Bullying Prevention Month. And so I am happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Tracy Hecht. Hi, Tracy.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, it is just an honor, actually, to have you, because I think this is such an important subject, and anyone who's tackling it at the level that you're doing it, because this, it's so important that we address these problems of bullying at a young age, and your books are just absolutely wonderful. It's a series, and it's called Nocturnes. The Nocturnals. And the Nocturnals, I received the books, and I'm holding them up to the camera here because we're also on YouTube, and I want people to see the beautiful, beautiful covers. The Nocturnals are stories that you've written, both for, there's picture books, and then there's short stories that are just perfect for children.
Oh, thank you. You know, it's, I am not sure what you're holding up right now, but I started the Nocturnal series with chapter books for, you know, sort of middle graders, third, fourth, fifth grade. And what we found is that a lot of families and schools, children who were younger were wanting to hear the stories, but the reading level was too high. So then I started the early reader series, which is really sort of for first and second graders, and it has the same three main characters, the fox, the pangolin, and the sugar glider. And the storytelling and language use is more simplified for that age group.
And in this time of the world, everything is stressful. And I have found myself, as I've had these books next to me on my reading table, and I've found myself just picking them up and reading them aloud to myself. Because I find them so, they are just so much fun to read aloud and just delightful. You've put them together so beautifully. And of course, the illustrations Josie Yee.
Yes,
absolutely beautiful. They capture the story and they capture the characters, and we'll talk about them in a minute, but I do want to say to everybody, you know, I believe so strongly in reading to children. It's how I learned to read at a young age, because my mother read to us every single night. I don't think we wouldn't go to sleep unless she'd read to us. You know, that was, and so we were all reading at a very young age, and we weren't very rich, and so mostly my mother was reading, you know, comic books to us, but that's how we learned to read at a young age, and so these books, which just read so beautifully, I think every parent should get these books and read them to the kids.
Well, it's nice to hear you say that. I mean, I am a really big advocate for reading aloud to kids. Everything about this data shows that reading aloud to your children is one of the most valuable things that you can do for them. It improves confidence, it improves comprehension and test scores across subjects, everything from math to language arts. It promotes their understanding of socio-emotional dynamics. It's really important and it's really valuable. And, you know, as a parent and an author, the Nocturnals, I really do think about that when I'm writing these books because, you know, I want to have really fun, rollicking stories that have a lot of adventure and laughter and dialogue. But I also think that, you know, really engaging kids in meaningful dynamics of their lives and of these character lives is really valuable. And I think that, you know, one of the things that's been really exciting about the Nocturnal series is that librarians and schools and families have really taken to them for their values in social emotional learning and dynamics and even, you know, this whole bullying and prevention because, you know, I really do spend a lot of time trying to understand what motivates good behavior and bad behavior in the characters and showing kids that too, which I think is an empowering thing for kids to understand what motivates good and bad behavior in their own lives.
Well, you've done a terrific job with these books. As I said, they are just a joy to read out loud. I started the first one, the Kooky Kinkajou. It's, "I'm bored," Bismarck said. "There's nothing to do." The sugar glider harumphed and plopped down on a stump. "I have an idea, Bismarck," Tobin said to his friend. "Why don't we look for animal shapes in the stars?" Just right there, you start that and you can't stop.
Oh, that's so nice of you. I have to say the early readers are really fun to write because in addition to having, you know, sort of socio-emotional themes in them, they're written for first and second graders, which is right when kids are starting to have language, word recognition and acquisition and reading. And so there's a lot of alliteration. There's the images, as you mentioned, by Josie are really fantastic, and they're very complementary to the comprehension of the words. And they're really fun to write because the characters are so silly. The characters are crazy and fun. Obviously, they're the same characters in the middle grade books. But because they're much shorter and they're much more simplified in the early reader books for first and second graders, that they sort of punch more with that visual and that language and dynamic.
They are just, as I said, they're so much fun to read. I'm saying, "Paw," Bismarck said, "elephant, schmelephant, I'm bored looking at stars. We do that every night." It's just so much fun to read. I just love these books.
Well, you know, one of the things I also really think is important is that, you know, we all hope to be our best selves and conduct ourselves perfectly all the time. And we hope that for our kids, too. But let's face facts, that's just not the way it is. So I like having characters that that are flawed, too, that complain, that, you know, sometimes behave badly. I think that's another thing about the books that families and schools really like is that there's a real spectrum of behavior in these books. And there's a real identification and I would say modeling of what happens when there's bad behavior, whether it's something as silly as name calling, and I shouldn't say silly, something as simplistic as name calling at the young age or more sophisticated in the chapter books. It's I think valuable for kids to see behavior across the spectrum, not just all good behavior.
Well, tell us about the characters you've chosen, because I think it's fascinating, the ones that you have chosen. Just tell us about how you selected these characters.
Well, you mentioned that you used to love, you used to not go to sleep unless someone had read to you. And I have kids, and I read to them every night, but like most children, kids don't want to go to bed when it's time to go to bed.
Oh, no.
And so, right, you know, they have to go to the bathroom, they have to get, you know, they're hungry. There's a whole list of reasons why children don't want to go to sleep at night. And so I decided to write a series of books that take place when it's time to go to bed in that way that, like, it would be fun to get into bed when something was just waking up. And that pretty quickly led me to Nocturnal Animals, which I have to tell you, they're so fantastic and wacky and weird. And that's part of the fun of the nocturnal storytelling are all of these different characters, which are real animals. And the three main characters that are in all of the stories and that this nocturnal series are based on is a fox named Dawn, a pangolin named Tobin, and a sugar glider named Bismarck. And their threesome, their friendship, is really sort of the foundation to all the storytelling, and they come across every crazy kind of animal you can ever imagine. Tuataras, which are, you know, these nocturnal, like almost like reptiles that are descendants from dinosaurs, and jerboas and eyes. And it is really a fun series to write and fun for kids, because not only are these animals real and fun to read about in the stories in a fictional way, but they can go online and see them, you know, in YouTube videos and in real life, too.
Yeah, I think that's great, because these are animals that people haven't heard about usually. And so it really made, other than the red fox, which we had in northern Michigan, that's where I was born, and that's, we did have red fox there, and of course fireflies. Oh, we had fireflies. Oh, it was so wonderful. My childhood was so wonderful, because we did actually lay on the ground and watch the stars and look for animals. And so it was absolutely wonderful. And I'm so glad that you know, so many kids can't go outside anymore. They don't go out in the dark. So I think that you bring these stories to life so beautifully. And I know that actually one of the things I like is when those globes that have the stars, and you can put them on the ceiling for kids. I think that's wonderful. And I would suggest the people might want to do that, and because it's just so nice for children to think and to dream about other things, you know. It's just, I think it's wonderful, and I love the characters. I love each of them. They're delightfully done, drawn, and you've given each of them a real character, so we really know them.
Yeah, I think that's you know, again, that's really rooted in their animal physiology too. So when you research foxes, Dawn really, she sort of reminds you of a real life fox. You know, she's very thoughtful. She's strong. She's fast. She's not of a ton of, like, a lot of words. But then when you look at a sugar glider, they're these teeny little, like, sort of flying squirrel type things. And they have these big eyes, and they kind of throw themselves off these trees, and they're really silly and wacky. And that's much more aligned with what Bismarck's character is like. And you also talk about something else, which I just think is such a fun part of writing this and a really great thing for kids, which is that nighttime is magical. You know, I mean, nighttime is the time they're not allowed to be awake. So making that a really exciting, fantasyful time with real things like fireflies and starry constellation skies, that is all inherent to what's fun about the storytelling of the Nocturnals and for kids to read, is that they get to go into this very magical realm that is also real.
And I love that you've introduced so many interesting and fun words. And at the back of the book, where you mentioned, like, what, ballyhoo and hullabaloo, and, you know, I think that's so great for kids to learn words like that.
You know, when kids are learning to read, oftentimes it's hard because they have to read a lot of sight words, you know, really basic memorization. And reading is wonderful and delightful and can be an incredibly exciting time for some kids, but it can be hard for other kids who developmentally aren't reading at the same level as their peers, or they're just taking to it slower. And I think that the early reader books, which are, you know, for kids first and second grade just learning to read, I do a lot of alliteration, which is really fun for kids just to say words that sort of sound funny together. And then I do a lot of words that are playful to sound. So in the Kooky Kinkajou, we have kinkajous and hullabaloos and ballyhoos and switcheroos. And that loosens up the experience of learning to read. So if you're a strong reader, it's fun and you can do it all on your own. And if maybe you're taking to reading a little bit more slowly, you still can have fun with, like, these silly words, because they're rhyming and they're connected, and it's a little bit more playful than maybe a serious text, which I think can be good for kids.
I think it's wonderful. It really expands their knowledge, and that's the important thing. I love when a children's book, you know, expands a child's horizons in many ways and opens them up to new ideas. And certainly I do think people are going to, even parents will look it up and they'll say, you know, what are these animals, and where do pangolins live? And you know, they'll look maybe it up in Wikipedia, and they'll find out, you know, where they have their habitat. And all of this just expands the knowledge for kids. But through all of it.
So that actually, the one of the things that's been really fun of the series is that, you know, I wrote these to be just, you know, hopefully really fun, satisfying chapter books for kids and then later the early readers. And the feedback we've gotten from schools and from families around really engaging in the books outside of the stories, the publisher has put together all of these incredible materials. So incredible curriculum guides and language arts and STEM guides for schools and activity kits and games for families at home. And you can read the books, and then all of these things are available on nocturnalsworld.com. So I'm really happy with the publisher's support of it, because it's been great for families on rainy weekends or traveling in a car or, you know, schools to do, you know, in recess or free time. It's been great.
I was going to say that they've done a beautiful job with both the books themselves. They're just beautifully done. The paper's great. The layout's great. I love these sections in the back that, you know, give explanations and additional information. And as you said, the study guides. And it's so important. And of course, the basic, you know, where you started so much of this with your passion to stop bullying. So do you want to go through, you have four sort of main points about bullying, that ideas on how to help parents and family to think about how to stop bullying.
Well, you know, it's complicated, and I'm not sure I even thought about that specifically when I was writing the books, but I do spend a lot of time with the characters and the storytelling really letting kids understand what motivates behavior, because I think that's a really the key thing to bullying, is to empower someone to understand what's making someone act like a bully or behave badly. And so as a result of, you know, just that inherent nature of the storytelling, we have done a lot of bullying prevention outreach. And one of the things I think that books are really helpful for kids is it gives them the ability to learn vocabulary and language around bullying behavior, because they see it in these characters and they can express it in a fictional world and then figure out how it is happening or relates to their real world on the playground and the class.
And it's so important that kids understand that you can be anything. Here you can be different animals, or with people you can be different colors, you can come from different countries, you speak different languages, but underneath we all have we want to be good and have fun and in a nice way and live nicely with each other. And I think that's what your nocturnals do. They have, as you said, they have real emotions. They're not always nice. I mean, they like don't want, they're bored, or they don't want to do this, or they don't want to do that. But then they come together and they say, yeah, you know, we have more fun if we all work together.
I think that's a really key thing, which is that, you know, we all want to be perfect all the time, but we all are not perfect all the time. And I think when you learn how to repair a situation or a dynamic from behaving badly, or see how somebody else does it, it's really helpful. And I think that, you know, knowing whether or not seeing in another character and then understanding how it influences your life is valuable. And knowing, having words and language to do that relationship repair is valuable. And I spend a lot of time in these books with that too, around, gosh, this didn't work out well, let's talk about why and how. And it's all very, you know, fiction based and fun and in the context of the story, but I think it's really useful for kids in their life.
It is. And as a homeschool mom, I was a homeschool mom for 20 years. One of the things that when you quickly learn when you're a homeschool mom that you have to raise kids who are nice, because you can't be with them 24/7 if they're not nice kids, you know? They have to, I mean, you really can't. And it's always so surprising to me, parents, in those days, it was, you know, 20 years ago, they homeschooling. But all of us, and we eventually formed homeschooling groups and stuff, but we all had the same thing in common. Our children not only had to be nice because we couldn't work with them all day if they weren't. But they had to learn to work with other people. And one of the delightful things about, and in this case, I love that you have a nice vocabulary, because I think it's so important for children to learn to talk out things. And homeschool children are absolutely fantastic. You take a group of homeschool children and they will talk to adults. They will, in a room full of adults, they will talk to the adults, they'll ask them questions, they'll do, because they learn early that if they're going to get along with mom or dad, whoever is a homeschool teacher, they've got to be giving, they've got to share, they've got to do that. And so that's why I love these books. I think really you give vocabulary that I think will help children to maybe get out there and talk more to each other and even to adults.
It's I love hearing this, and I love hearing the motivation, which is I have to be with my kids all day. I want them to be good people. But I will say that, you know, I do think, you know, being a good citizen and having good skills around social emotional dynamics and behavior really helps make you enjoy your own life more. And so, you know, not in an overt way. I mean, the book I just finished writing, which will be published next spring, is called The Best Burp. And it's about a burp off and about whether or not that's the way to be your best self, and then what are ways to be your best self. And so it's not heavy-handed or didactic. It's just meant to sort of have conversation around what does it mean to be a good person to myself, to others? How do I have aspirations to do that even better? What language and vocabulary and experiences help to enable that? And I think about all of that when I'm writing these books, even though at the end of the day, they're just really playful stories about nocturnal animals.
Well, you've done a beautiful job. And Fable Film Press, who published this, is absolutely fantastic. The series is called The Nocturnals. And again, what is the website where they can find out more information?
You can buy the books anywhere books are sold. So at a bookstore or library, online, and you can go to nocturnalsworld.com and you can find all of the support materials and things there too.
Well, Tracy Hecht, I think you've done a wonderful, wonderful job with these books and this series, and I'm just so happy that you were on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so nice to speak with you.
Okay, when the next book comes out, you're going to be right back here, okay?
Okay, great.
Okay. Bye-bye now, Tracy. Bye. Oh, she's so sweet. Okay, we're going to do a few commercials, then I'm coming back with a power couple. Okay.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with a power literary couple. It's a real thrill to talk to Diane Romaine and Sterling Bennett. Hi, who do I have on the phone there?
Hi, this is both Diane.
Oh, both of you. Okay, well, this is so nice to have a power couple. That's what I'm going to call you. Wow, writers, professors, you know, just brilliant people. And it's a thrill to talk to both of you today. Diane, your new book is, and your debut book called The Trumpet Lesson is, I just love this book. We'll talk about that. And then Sterling, wow, what can I say? You are just, I don't know. Playing for Pancho Villa is a very, very special book. It's a short book, and I'm just, at the end, I wasn't sure if I wanted more or if you just put everything in there that was absolutely necessary. So it's so nice to be talking to you too today.
Okay, good. Good to be here.
Okay. Well, let's talk first. Maybe we'll talk, Diane, you know, when I received your book, I thought The Trumpet Lesson, that's interesting. I played the flute when I was young, and I always wanted to play that trumpet, but I don't know, none of the boys who play the trumpet would ever let me touch them. So how did you get this idea? First of all, let's mention where the two of you live. You live in a very special place in Mexico, generally, usually, I believe.
Yes, we live right in the geographic center of Mexico, in the highlands. Our town is a canyon city at 6,500 feet, higher than Denver.
Wow.
It's called Guanajuato. It's a colonial town with beautiful buildings. There were silver and gold mines in the heyday of the mining, and they're still in operation, some of them.
So with this background, of course, both of you are American, and you somehow, over your lifetime, you did a lot of interesting things, and you landed up here in this, which is a very, very beautiful place in Mexico. And you've drawn upon your knowledge of Mexico to really, I think, paint a picture in both of your books that gives us a different Mexico than most people think about. So tell us about how you got the idea for The Trumpet Lesson.
Well, I was originally writing about a writing group, and there was a character in the writing group who had made fictional stories of other members of the writing group, but she had never told her own story to the writing group. And I was thinking about, well, what could that story be? And one morning it came to me that it would be a woman who had relinquished a baby as a teenager in the 60s when the adoptions were closed for the most part. The person who relinquished the baby did not know where the baby would go and would lose the baby forever. And it just struck me as such a sad story and a complex story that I decided I wanted to learn more about that and write about it. And so that's what I did. And then I came across this other character who came to me one morning. That was Pamela. And she was, while the main character was very shy and quiet and would not talk about some of her deepest feelings, this other character, Pamela, was a lively, very, very candid person who spoke freely about many things. And I decided to bring her to Mexico. I wanted her to be from the U.S., but to be in Mexico. And because we had many friends in the orchestra who were from other countries besides Mexico, I thought, oh, well, that would be a perfect place for her to be. And the trumpet would be a perfect instrument for a very outspoken, brave woman. So so I picked the trumpet.
And she certainly is. And your main character's name is Callie Quinn. And
that's right.
You have woven a fascinating story of her life, of the people around her, and of this mystery of this lost child or the child that she gave up. So there's a lot mm-hmm. in there that we have to sort of discover. And the nice thing is you have a very, very balanced and very smooth reveal as you tell the story. We learn a little bit more. You sort of peel back the information and take us into this story. And all of the characters, there are hidden things. There are things that we don't understand in the beginning, but you really make these people come alive.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm very interested in psychology, and so I was hoping that my characters would seem real, and especially that they would be dealing with things that many of us deal with. Many of us have secrets or regrets, or because of social stigmas, we don't feel that we're able to be really candid about our lives. And to me, that's a very sad kind of set of circumstances, the way people are silenced, and I wanted to explore that also in the novel.
Well, this is really, you know, it's an amazing thing to write a book in the first place, but then to have your debut book being selected as a winner in the Women's Fiction for 2019 American Fiction Awards. I mean, this is something really wonderful and well-deserved because, as I said, I love your writing. It's very lyrical. You're telling a fascinating story. And, of course, the part about the trumpet is interesting in that you actually took trumpet lessons and I assume you can now play the trumpet after. Yes?
Well, I wish I could play. Unfortunately, I developed a tremor in my embouchure, and now I don't play. But I played enthusiastically for 5 years and had a wonderful time. I had many different teachers. I took from at least 3 different teachers in Mexico when I was there, primarily with one of the trumpeters at the professional orchestra in town, Jason Pettit, who's from Texas, and he was living in Guanajuato at the time. But then when I traveled, I took trumpet lessons from other people, from people in California, a jazz trumpeter in Kansas City. When we were in Paris, I went to the Conservatory of Music and Dance there and sat in on a class, and the teacher selected one of his master's degree students to give me lessons. I just had so much fun traveling and taking the trumpet lessons and playing on the streets of Paris, playing in a jazz jam in Florence when we were in Italy, and at a friend's wedding on a patio in our garden, in plazas in Guanajuato with Jason, my trumpet teacher there. We would play jazz duets and sometimes classical duets. So I had a wonderful time, and I learned so much about the trumpet, partly by playing it, but also by knowing so many trumpeters and hearing their stories. And the book is what it is, in large part because I had that experience, those wonderful 5 years with the trumpet.
And isn't it wonderful? One of the joys of life is really to see your words on paper, but sometimes it's the journey that gets you to those words that is so fulfilling, and it's so wonderful that sometimes an idea will grab you. In your case, it's a trumpet, and other people will have this. But then it's that research part, that the part before you actually start writing the words, that you've had so much fun doing. And it just expands your life because I'm sure, you know, you were a professor of philosophy, right? Philosophy, I think, what did I read?
Yes.
Of philosophy of emotions, which is an interesting thing, a great thing for an author, because you have to be able to understand emotion. But I'm sure you never thought that one day you in Mexico you'd start playing the trumpet and writing a beautiful book that incorporates what you learned and what and the people that you meet along the way.
Yes, it was fascinating. I often think I wish I had kept more of a journal the whole time through, because it was really fascinating to read all of the reading I did, to learn about the different characters and what their lives would be like and so on and so forth. All of that was, I love research, so all of that was really interesting. I have a whole bookcase of books and other books and music that I listened to or read in the course of writing this novel. And all of, as you say, that was for me a fascinating part of the journey.
Well, I think you've done a brilliant job with this book. And so I'm going to talk to Sterling for a little bit, but I want, do you have a dedicated website for yourself?
Yes.
What is it?
DianeRomaine.com.
Okay, and people can go there, and we'll talk. I'll talk to you a little bit more about it, because I want people to. It is a fascinating book, and it really does explore, you know, the attitudes that we had back in the 60s, 70s, whenever, about teenage pregnancy. Mm-hmm. It addresses mm-hmm. race problems today mm-hmm. and yesterday, and unfortunately, we thought we'd get over it, but it looks like nothing ever gets over it. And just generally, the whole aspect of people being accepted and what people have to have hidden in the past and how mm-hmm. people can be more open. So you touch upon all of that in a really fascinating book. And the main character, as I said, I really like her. Callie Quinn is fascinating, and you've done a terrific job with her.
Thank you.
Now, Sterling, I want to talk to you because
Wow.
Tell us about this wonderful book that you've written, Playing for Pancho Villa.
Well, first of all, it's the second in a trilogy. There are three novels, and that's the middle one. It takes place in 1916 in the Revolution, the Mexican Revolution. And it's about a young man who's suffering from mercury poisoning, who wanders, his doctor tells him to get some fresh air and have an adventure. And he wanders down 50 miles east of El Paso, or west, I've forgotten now. But he goes down and gets mixed up with the revolution and barely survives.
Well, the story is fascinating.
The idea of the novel came pretty much from, I guess, me coming down into Mexico. But it struck a bell when I saw in a bookstore in Mexico City, a wonderful bookstore called Pendulo. There's a series of them. So you can eat there and you can read there. It's a very good bookstore. And I was thumbing through a book of old photographs, antique photographs from history, and I ran across a picture, I think it was a picture, a photo of a woman who was called an angel of death, and she killed the wounded somehow. So I didn't say why, but she would go through the battlefield dispatching the young soldiers who were dying. And so that became a short story of Mr. Leibniz and the Avocado, which is the central idea of that is, are we responsible for our acts? And Leibniz says, I know that our mind and our actions are parallel and directed by God. And there's no causal relationship between the two. So one of my main characters in the short story says, well, what about responsibility. Are we responsible for our acts? So I created a scene like that. That became the... Then I thought, well, I'll write... No, then I met a former editor by the name of Fred Hills, who had a distinguished background in senior editor at Simon Schuster, and he edited Raymond Carr and William Soroyan and Vladimir Nabokov and Carnegie Barrett. And he met us, Diane and me, at a writers' conference, which is annual in San Diego, Allende, which is an hour and a half east of us, a wonderful writers' conference. And he read the short story, and he liked it, and he said, you better start writing your books before they issue you a Walker.
Well, it's wonderful that you did start writing and that you've written these books. As you said, it's a trilogy. And with this book, people really, I think most Americans don't really know that much about Mexico at all in general. I mean, they would
That's a very important point. My feeling is that... Mexicans are very aware of the United States. And there's a saying down there that we're so close to the United States, so far from God. And so they know a great deal about the United States, but I think you can explain that way, that a dominant, powerful culture is often blind to people outside of that culture. And that works down into ways too. The dominant race can be blind to other races and people. So, yes, I often feel that there's a kind of a glass wall when you start to talk about your book, or something like that, this kind of glass wall goes up, or like on a lizard's lid, it comes down or up, I don't know which way it goes. But a kind of an inability to look across into the other cultures.
Exactly. And having been myself in Mexico, for example, in Mexico City, which is very cultured, very sophisticated. And when I came back to the States and I told people, well, Mexico City is such a sophisticated city and culturally so advanced and with wonderful art, wonderful, of course, orchestras, wonderful music. And people are surprised. They say, oh, that's not their image of Mexico. And so I think both
they
of you...
You say they are surprised.
What?
When you tell people about Mexico City, they're surprised that it's so cultural.
They are. They're complete. No, they're very. They're surprised. Yeah. They don't expect it when you tell them there's throughout Mexico there are many great orchestras, great classical orchestras, wonderful opera companies, very sophisticated people, people who speak not just two languages, sometimes three languages, literate people who love to read books. And so it's difficult sometimes. Americans don't have this image. They don't see enough of that side of Mexico. And so I think that...
That's why they should read Diane's book and my book.
Exactly. That's what I say. They should read your books because it does give you people a new look at Mexico, a different a feeling about it. As I said, here in your area, you have a great orchestra, a world-class orchestra, and you have talented people, amazing people, amazing authors, amazing artists. And so people really, I that's why I wanted to have you on, too. And, you know, first I was contacted about having Diane, but I said, I have to have Sterling Bennett because people have to read these books. And I particularly love the Pancho Villa book because I've always been fascinated in that whole Mexican Revolution during 1916. I think it's fascinating. And so I want to encourage people to read your books and also to go to your website. You have a very a very good website. It has lots of information about you, and it's sterlingbennett.com. And everybody, everybody should go to there, because on that website, there's a lot of information about Sterling. Of course, you are a professor, and so I don't have time to go into your education. So well educated, he knew Latin and Greek, and a professor for so many years. This is for me, doing this radio program is fun because I get to talk to all the famous professors in the world, and I'm getting my own. I can get my own degree here because I can call up and get any professor that I want to talk to. It's wonderful. It's so much fun for me. So I had Robert.
Let me say one more thing about Mexicans. They are a kind, gentle, wonderful people, very generous. And we're surrounded by young people in this city who respect age and respect learning. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing to have a young yoga teacher or young waiters and waitresses. I can't say their praise enough. Go to Mexico, go in England, away from the beaches, and meet the people. Learn some Spanish. That's the entry.
Exactly. Well, I think both of you, as I say, I call you the power literary couple, Diane Romaine and Sterling Bennett. And Diane, again, just repeat your website so everybody can hear it.
Yes, it's Diane, and that's with two N's. DIANNEROMAIN.com.
And people can go there. And both of you have great websites. And I just want to encourage everyone, get these books. Learn more about Mexico because it's in the news and we have to know more and understand the people. And particularly, I'm telling you, Diane's book is a very touching book, beautifully. Just it's a book that will really grab you. And again, Diane and Sterling, I want to thank you so much for being just wonderful guests today on Joy on Paper.
Thank you, Patsy.
Thank you,
it was great fun.
Okay. Well, I will continue to promote your books because I think it's important that people understand Mexico better and that they read some really great books. And both of you are fantastic writers.
Thank you.
Thanks for the interview.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, wow. They are fascinating. And it's funny, you know, I've been so lucky. I get all these professors, and I want to remind everyone again that I had Robert Castor on, and he wrote the book called The Appian Way. And if any of you are going to Italy, you must get this book because it's an absolutely wonderful book about the Appian Way. It's called Appian Way, Ghost Road, Queen of Roads, and that's by Robert Castor. And then Diane Romaine, the book is called The Trumpet Lesson. And this is what I tell all of you out there. You want to do something, do it. And as she said, keep a journal. Whatever it is you want to do, keep a journal, do it. I'm not saying anything, but, you know, Sterling Bennett is not young. He was born in, I think, 1933, something like that. He started writing pretty late in life. He was a major professor at a university for many, many years. He wrote short stories, but then he comes out with these wonderful books. And this is what is the joy of life, that you're never, never too old to start writing. And so all you have to do is just pick up that pencil. You don't need a computer even. All you need is paper and pencil and just start. A pencil is sometimes nice because it's easy to erase or just cross out. But just give it a try. You might want to start with poetry. You might want to start with a journal that later on you can turn into a novel and or a memoir or whatever. Or maybe you'll end up being a a script writer. You never know. Once you start writing, you discover where your talent is. You discover if it's in one particular area. You might be a nonfiction writer. It doesn't matter what you are, as long as you get those words down on paper and just start writing. One of the things I want to ask everybody, if you have, I've been wanting to hear from people about what is the one book, if you have, could recommend one book for a young person, so let's say a 16-year-old, and you want them, they can read one book, what book would it be that you would want them to really immerse themselves in so that they could learn something and be, have a different outlook on life? Because one of the things that I think is so important, so many young people, you waste so many years by not having big dreams. And you need to have big dreams and just work towards them. And it might be years. I mean, look at here, Diane Romaine and Sterling Bennett, they're not young. And in a few weeks, I'm going to be having Eugenia Lovett West on. She's 96 years old. Her new book, by the way, is just fantastic. I just received it a few days ago. I'm in between everything else that's been happening in my life. I've just been so busy reading that book because it is really good. And she's 96 years old. I mean, listen, you have so much that you can do. So pick a hobby, pick a subject, pick your family, start doing research, start writing about it, start keeping notes, keep a journal, and you never know where it will lead you. And this is one of the absolutely wonderful things that you can do for yourself because it keeps your mind young. One of the important things that we have all these neurons in our brain, and if you keep watching the same television show over and over, none of the other neurons are working. They all hibernate. So this is the problem. Or you watch the same football game, because essentially all football games are the same. Although in baseball, we do have some really exceptional things where we have no hitters and ones that go for long innings. I love that. That's why I love baseball. Anyway, remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky and talented, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a streaming video, a major motion picture, or a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't unless you start writing. So get busy today, and while you're at it, say something nice to somebody today, because they need it, and you need it too. And just say something nice. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room because I'm running out of time. Thank you, Ed, for everything. He's saluting me. Aha! And I'm saluting him. Everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful day. Bye-bye now.